We're reading Matthew 5, 10 through 16. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you, falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand. And it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. The word of God for the people of God.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to start today. Sometimes I do this, sometimes I don't, but today, probably a little bit for myself, just busy, and I sort of need to focus in, but also the topics we're covering are tough topics. So I just want to start off with praying. Lord, I just come and I invite you to come and be here, Lord. I pray that whatever's communicated through me, that it would be your words. Lord, even if I mess it up, Lord, fix it. Fix it in the airwaves. But Lord, I just pray that you'd open our hearts to hear what you have to say. Amen. So the title of my message is Offensive or Compromising? Do we have to do either? And my answer would be yes and no. Or maybe even a no and yes. Thing is, we may say things that bring offense. The gospel is an offense. But does that mean that we personally have to be offensive? So see, yes and no. Do we have to compromise? Well, I'm going to say yes against what society says, potentially is what some parts of society say is the right way to do social justice. We might have to compromise according to our cultural standards, but do we have to compromise in our biblical standards? No. We should feel that tension. The Bible says that we as believers are aliens in this world. So that tension would only be normal. I've done mission trips to Mexico, and I've been other places, even parts of this country, have such radically different cultures that you can just feel out of place. You feel out of place when you go and start talking, and you realize, like I know I grew up in New Orleans, so down there, if you said somebody said, we're going to go to Schwagman's and make some groceries, be like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? I mean, you're going to go make dinner or what's it mean? But down there, they make groceries by going to the grocery store and buying them. So there's things when we're an alien in our culture and in this world. So there's going to be a tension. You want to try and get to the point where you feel totally comfortable living in our culture as a Christian, it's not going to happen. So do we have to compromise against some things? Yes, some things no. We often grow in how we do this. I guarantee you, if you were to talk to all of us pastors on staff, our superintendents, our bishops going all the way to the top, they'd say they're constantly learning how to do this. We are even constantly, we're going through training as pastors every other month, trying to help us do this. And it's still hard, even for us. So it gets complicated. Because, especially when we're talking about social justice, doing good things, it gets complicated when, is it the right way? Is it done the right way? Because all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Everyone, whatever we try and do in our own power, really falls short. And so then, does that mean that everything that somebody else is doing, a humanist is doing, is wrong? No, it doesn't. I'm just making it more complicated here. Hopefully by the end, it'll say, hey, this isn't as simple as it seems. Romans tells us that there's a moral code written on everyone's heart. And I think it's important to realize that, because when we realize that, we can better understand that, okay, what they're doing may even be part of what God has put on their heart, even if they don't put that to God. Because if we look here in Romans 2, 14 through 15, it says, indeed, when Gentiles who do not have the law do by nature's things required by the law, they are the law for themselves, even though they do not have the law. They show that the requirements of the law that are written on their hearts, their consciences, also bearing witness in their thoughts, sometimes accusing them. So we can see the fact that even in an immoral world, the fact that the immoral world has some morality is still biblical. There's a certain level of this morality that's written on our hearts. It's part of our DNA as humans. So we can come alongside and it all seems the same. But then it isn't always. You know, often Sissy and I, we feed the homeless, and I think I've talked about it a couple times in here. But we feed the homeless. Often we have people, Christians and non-Christians, talk to us and they really get why we're doing it. And some people in here, because you've heard me share, might understand, but it's because of a compassion, or you feel this, or you feel that, or you really want to help. And for us, it goes much deeper than that. It goes much deeper than that. It's about the fact that we believe everyone was created in the image of God, including the homeless people. Now, let me tell you that. I'm able to say that in one sentence and then tell someone, we're here to love on you like that, but I don't agree with the fact that you're a heroin addict. I don't agree with the fact that you steal. But we can communicate love and all these things while we're doing this. But there's something more, there's something different to why we do it than if we just take a humanist standpoint, which is just, hey, oh, we should help out our fellow man. Our fellow person, I should say. We should help each other out. There's something deeper that goes on there. And there's something deeper that really all of us, as we engage in social justice issues, that we should be coming at it from a deeper level. But today we're going to look at how we can engage in our social justice culture and still maintain our values. We're going to look at Joseph, Daniel, and Jesus. And I believe that you're going to see that we can engage our culture and still maintain our values. I think by doing three things: keeping our mission, which is the Great Commission. We're supposed to go and make disciples. Keeping that is a focus. Showing love, even when it seems unloving. Sometimes love doesn't always seem loving. But doing that, and also being of value to the culture. And I'll explain that a little more as we go. But first, let's look at Joseph. Some of you may not know Joseph. I'll give you a broad picture. So if you need to know more, you can open up your books to Genesis. Right around 41, somewhere in there, is when that starts. But he became a mighty influencer in the Egyptian culture. As a Hebrew, he kept a whole region from running out of food during an extended famine that went on for years. That sounds like social justice to me there, doesn't it? Yes. He obviously embraced many of the Egyptian systems, and he ended up managing most of the Egyptian empire, coming up from a slave all the way up to doing that. But in there, he didn't change his morals. It even got him put in prison when he stood up for moral things. He even ended up being in prison. And the whole time, he kept getting promoted and given favor, even though he was a couple times in prison and stuff. But he kept getting promoted and eventually running the kingdom. But the thing about him, not only did he stand up for his morals, he made it clear why he was doing it. I cannot do it. Genesis 41:16. I cannot do it, Joseph replied to the Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. Pharaoh is wanting an answer, and he says, I cannot do it, but my God can do it through me. Always going back to his mission, to serving his God, and that's how he came, and as God used him, he would go and engage the culture. And again, and probably one of the, in the Bible, one of the greatest social justice things, reaching out. That famine kept countries all around them in food for 7 years. That's quite a remarkable feat when we're talking about social justice. But what can we learn from Joseph? First of all, be of value to the culture. He actually was doing things. He didn't just say, praise Jesus. He didn't just tell everyone else what they need to do. Oh, we need to take care of these people. We need to feed the rest of the people. A famine's coming. No, he came in and he managed it. He was of value to that culture. He was engaged in that social justice venture. All the time declaring why he was there. I'm here because I serve my God and he has given me this wisdom. But he was of value to the culture. We need to be of value to our culture if we want to have influence. Do you think if he wasn't of value that he would have been promoted to basically second in charge of the whole land? Probably not. Another thing is, don't let your situation make you feel like you failed. Often as we engage culture, we might end up feeling ostracized, beaten down, misunderstood. Who knows, eventually many places in the world people are thrown in prison, just like Joseph was. But don't let your situation you're in now, as you're maybe standing up for your beliefs and it doesn't seem to work out, don't feel like you failed. If you allow God to do it, he will bring the success. The success of Joseph possibly saved the Jewish people as a whole. So if they all had starved to death, we may not even have our faith. So jumping ahead to Daniel. Daniel, he and others were brought into captivity and they tried to integrate them into their culture. They even made them take on names that tied them to their gods. So Daniel, and by the way, all the other names but one out of the original names, I think has a direct connotation to God. That El on Daniel is Elohim and the Mishael, which we'll get, I'll move on here. But they switched them. So in Daniel 1:6-7, it says, among those who were chosen were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar. To Hananiah, Shadrach. And to Mishael, Meshach. And to Azariah, Abednego. They were given these names. They went to school even to try and integrate them. They were going to school for 3 years to teach them all the wisdom that their culture had. And instantly, they stood up to their culture. As they brought them in, they said, no, we're not going to eat your food. My guess is because there wasn't like, as far as we know, it wasn't like food that was considered bad, but it was probably more that was sacrificed in honor to their gods. And they said, no, we're not going to eat that food. And they said, but oh, you're going to starve to death and you'll be useless to us and we'll have to kill you. They said, no, put our God to the test. Feed us only these foods that we're asking for, and you feed your people your food that you think gives strength. And they ended up actually gaining more weight than the other people, looking stronger. They immediately stood up to the culture and said, no, we're not going to participate in these things that we don't agree with. The thing is, though, they obviously, again, were of value to culture. Because if we look at Daniel 1:20, it says, they became the smartest of the people who worked for the king. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters of the whole kingdom. Again, if we want to engage our culture, we need to be of value to it. Todd, if I have a disagreement with you and I have done nothing to be of value, it's so much easier just to walk away from that relationship. But I'll tell you, you want to be able to say something hard to somebody, build a relationship and be of value to them. Now they have to listen to you. Because if you're of value to their life, to their operation, to their outreach, their social justice issue, now they have to listen to you. It's so key, and also it's a great witness too. If you could be like these people and be 10 times smarter than everyone else, even if they disagree with you, how much do you think they're going to listen? If you can be 10 times harder worker than your coworker, how much more do you think your coworkers are going to listen to you, even when they might disagree with you? And if you have to go and be part of an agency, many agencies nowadays, we haven't aligned with some agencies that actually do good things for the community because they say, well, if you're going to align with us, you need to have these beliefs and you need to promote these things. And we've said, no, we're not going to. You know what our goal is to do it better than we could do it with them. And then they have to go, huh, I wonder what's going on over there. I wonder what's going on. So all along the way, Daniel and his three friends just stood up for what was right. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I think most of us are familiar with it, but they wouldn't bow down and worship their gods. And they said, well, we're going to throw them in the furnace and burn them if they won't bow down to our gods. And they were thrown into the furnace. And this great story, I wish I could probably preach just on that, get all excited. But they were thrown in there, and they didn't burn. In fact, when they came out of the fire, not only was that, but they didn't even smell like the soot. God saved them as they stood up for their beliefs in that culture. And I'll tell you, we often feel if someone was starting to burn a furnace and make it 7 times hotter than ever before, you might be like, okay, it could get tricky. And we feel those pressures. We feel those pressures to say, oh, if you don't believe what I'm doing is right, then you're evil. And that comes down to the humanist side of things. We don't have to agree with everyone. We can stand up and say, no, I think this is wrong. I'm still going to love you. I'm still going to do these good things, but I do not agree that this is right. You know, Sissy and I with the homeless, and it could be easy, you know, in Portland now, drugs have been, most people don't realize it, but been decriminalized. So even the hard drugs, the Portland police, if they catch you with hard drugs, they take the drugs away maybe, and they recommend you to go to rehab. And if not, then they just let you go. You have a choice to do that. Portland does not arrest people on drug charges. Now, on some dealing charges, they will. But when it comes to a user, and now there's some great things about it, aren't there? A bigger focus on trying to turn someone's life around by referring them to a rehab, but they're saying, oh no, there's nothing really wrong with what you're doing. But if you want help, we'll help you. And I just tell you, just like I mentioned, is I'm clear. I think what you're doing is wrong. It doesn't help your life at all when I run into people, but I'm here to love you anyway. So we don't have to agree that heroin is okay to actually help heroin addicts. In the end, Daniel ends up giving guidance to the king. He even gets to the point where the king calls him by his real name. Now that's a miracle there. Daniel, again, was of so much value to his culture that out of respect for him, the king ends up calling him by his given name, which refers to Elohim, the God that we worship. So what can we learn from Daniel and his friends? We should stand up for your faith. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of what culture is going to say. Look at Daniel in the lion's den. Another story later on, we see that there's stuff that happens with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the furnace. They had stuff happen, but they stood up and God stood behind them. Even though there may have been troubles for a period of time, God stood behind them and helped them through. So the last person, Jesus, and we could go on and on about Jesus. I could tell you all day long, or weeks and months and all that, but all the ways that Jesus does things properly in that. So you probably have all types of things already going on in your head. So I'm going to run through some of it quickly. But first of all, Jesus often confronted the root of the problem. Jesus says the money changers in the temple, he kicks them out. Jesus calls out the hypocrisy of the leaders when they're worried about tithing the last little thing, but they won't do. They'll give the last, even their spices, they give 10% of it, but they wouldn't show love and compassion for others. He challenges their hearts and motives. If you look through the Beatitudes in Matthew 5, which is scripture that was read, came from this, we see that there's murder is dealt with, divorce, oaths, forgiveness, love for your enemies, giving to the needy, prayer, fasting, judging others, true followers, and finally, a wise builder. He challenges the hearts and the motives. So he does become offensive to some people. Jesus does all this, but he also takes care of the needs around him. He feeds the hungry. He gives supernatural medical attention through healing. He brings hope to the hopeless. This sounds like social justice to me, doesn't it? Christian social justice, not humanist. I just want to point out, don't ever forget, anytime you hear the term, that the term social justice and social holiness originated from the church. I say let's take that term back from our political leaders. Let's take that term back from our culture. And let's let it be something that people would say that the church does it. But that means that we have to do more than vote for a program to solve a problem. We should be part of the solution. It also means that we can't vote against a program just because we don't agree with everything in it, especially if you're not going to be a part of the solution. And I see that a lot. Oh, I'm anti this and anti that, and I'll just give an example here. Do we take a stand on the sanctity of life, but refuse to provide financial, emotional, and spiritual needs to those who are wanting a choice? Most women who get abortions are using their choice because they feel they have no choice. Do you think we could step in and help that out? If rather than just being anti-something, what if we came in empowered by the Spirit of God and could provide for the poor? We could help provide somebody who might be thinking of ending a life, say, no, I'm going to commit. We as a church are going to commit. I personally am going to commit to helping you in whatever way you need. Someone who used to go to the church here, they were in a physically, emotionally abusive relationship, and no matter what they did, they divorced, and no matter what they did, the husband kept coming back to the situation. And somebody used to go here who had money. They weren't super wealthy, but still they had enough extra money to be able to do this. They, believe it or not, bought them a fake identity, moved them to another part of the country, supported them until all the kids were out of school. Now, in the time, the person got a job, but it was a minimum wage job, paid for college, took on and supported every part of that. Now, I'll tell you, that's the type of social justice I think the church should be involved in. Rather than saying, no, 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 that's wrong, 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 and oh, I'm not going to be part of what you want to do over there, even though there's some good in it, let's set the standard. Let's set the standard. Could we do the same thing for the poor, for the drug addict? Could we be respectful for our neighbors? Could we go beyond what anyone else is doing as a church? You want to know how to make a difference in social justice? You want to know how to have people listen to you when you say, well, no, I do my social justice because I'm powered by God. Here's the way you do it. Let's do it better. Let's do it better than they can. So what can we learn from Jesus? Jesus was not afraid to stand for his beliefs, obviously. He took care of the needs of those around him. He did things for the correct reason. Matthew 6, talking about giving to the needy, it says, "Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as with hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others." Are we doing it for the right reasons? Are we doing it for the right reasons? Again, part of the difference between Christian and humanists when it comes to social justice. I'll tell you also, we may suffer persecution. Matthew 5, 6, part of what Tim read, makes it clear. "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me." There's many other scriptures that speak to the fact that if we stand up for our beliefs, that we probably will be persecuted. Don't let that stop you. The last thing, if we do it right, we're going to build it on the proper foundation. What's the proper foundation? Jesus Christ. And I'm going to say in this context, the proper foundation is the Great Commission. And part of the Beatitudes, is, it says, talks about building a house. It says, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, the wind blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall." Our rock, I think, when it comes to social justice, is the Great Commission. Go and make disciples of all nations. And I'll tell you, well, we may meet a need, an initial need, just like Jesus often did before he preached. And I think we should do that unashamedly and without ties. But what's our ultimate goal? We want to communicate the gospel message that Jesus Christ died for you because he loves you. And he wants you to be one of his disciples. The Great Commission. So how do we engage social justice as a Christian in a humanist society? I think there's some common things that we can see, which I've really mentioned already. But all of them brought value, again, all of them brought value, including Jesus, to the situation and society. Bring value as someone empowered by the Spirit of God. You may say, how do I do that? Oh, I can't, you know, Daniel interpreted dreams. I can't do that. And Jesus was healing people. And these other people, I don't know, one's starting to throw me into a furnace. How do I use my gifts? God can use wherever you are. Whatever your gifts are, he can put that into a situation to help. Whatever it is. At work where I am, just the gifts that God has given me, I've been, I'll just say highly influential, actually very influential in the fact that we went from the worst terminal here in Portland in the country to within 7 months once we got involved in a plan to turn it around to getting to number 13. Huge number. I am a value there. I can go in and you know what? I'm able to go in and talk in a place where most people are told to be quiet about spiritual things. We just had where there's somebody who wants to be promoted in the company, but they probably have a drug problem, and they're just like, oh, we're not going to promote them. And I'm able to come in and say, well, you know, maybe there's other things we can do to help this person. And well, why not? I said, well, I believe that God, just keep going. And they listen to me. Why? Because I'm of value. I can go in there and stand up to just secular mindset because I'm of value. I've helped through the gifts that God has given me. If you want to talk to me about it, I can tell you the details because I'm not really wanting to have this be about me, but I just want to show you empowered by God. That's just dealing with safety and other stuff, helping to turn something around. So, brought value. How can you bring value to your situation? They all cared and loved others. How can you care and love for your community? Just another example. Political correctness and what you're supposed to do and say, and you're not supposed to be against this and that. And I know everyone on the room might not be on the same page as me, but again, I think my opinion would be that's part of the humanism that's creeping into our Christian culture. But we had a man who came to live with us years ago who was homosexual. And he lived with us for 2.5 years, I think, right about there. And I could tell when he found out that, oh, I was a part-time pastor, I saw his eyes get big, like, oh, no. He even later said, oh, I was ready to run. I thought it was going to be the end of the world. You know, in the end, this is a 45-year-old man, and he came to us about 1.5 years into it in tears. And he says, you know, I've been looking for love my whole life in the homosexual community and haven't found it. He says, I found it in the last place I thought I ever could, in a pastor and his wife. Did we agree with him? No, we didn't. But I'll tell you, we can communicate love. That, for me personally, it's been one of the strongest things to make that communication of love first. And we did that. I mean, honestly, some of that in there, it was easy because he already knew that we didn't agree. So I didn't have to tell him I didn't agree with him every day because he already knew that. So it made it easy. I could just love on him. And we loved on him. When he's also an alcoholic, and when none of his friends would pick him up from the bar because it closed and it was past the last TriMet bus, he'd wake me up at 3 a.m. I'd pick him up, bring him home. All types of things. I communicated love. Communicated love. And the last thing I just want to say, we're talking about the Great Commission. I just want to tell you, as it relates to social justice, and we're talking about this, one of the big things, I learned this in sales and trying to do business stuff, was be upfront. If you're at someone's house to sell something to them, don't try and make it sound like you're doing something else. If you're involved with something because of your faith, make it clear. Be upfront. Don't hide it. You don't have to make a weird thing out of it. It's just that when they say, oh, well, I'm out here planting trees in the community because I want to save the world, save the earth. You can say, well, yes, I'm out here to plant trees in the community because I believe God has given the responsibility to us as humans to take care of the earth. It becomes real simple. It doesn't have to be weird. It doesn't have to be preachy. But let be clear up front. You know what? You know how much easier it is to have the conversations now when you're up front than when you try and flip. All of a sudden, a year later, you try and flip in the fact that, oh, yeah, and by the way, I'm a Christian. Just be upfront. Why are you engaged in these things? So I want communion. We're going to have communion today. Just one thing for those who we don't have servers today. So I think we're good on that. But just everyone, I think we'll be able to have someone just bring them communion. If you can't come up, just ask someone next to you. But as we take communion, I want you to just look at our next steps. Just before you take communion, and just say, has God been calling me to take a stand for my faith against the humanistic culture I live in? If so, confess it, take your communion, repent. Is God calling you to share the gospel in a way that maybe you haven't imagined before? Again, let's just think about that before you go. Is God calling you to engage the culture in all the ways? Offensive, loving, compromising, not on our values, but on other things. Is God calling you to do that? I just want you to take a serious think about that before we take communion.